countrywide on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Caller Gas, celebrating 80 years, bringing energy to Ireland's homes and businesses.
It's John Cook with you in for Damien this week. Well, it's been a big week on the farm and at the factory as well, as a fresh round of beef talks was agreed to, with the Agriculture Minister calling on meat processors to come out of the courts and farmers to lift their blockades. But what happens next? Well, in a few moments, we'll be looking ahead to Monday's talks. But the protests aren't over yet, with Meat Industry Ireland saying an increased number of plants are being blockaded now, despite the announcement of talks. I've been meeting farmers at factory gates across the country throughout this latest round of pickets. Here's some of what they had to say.
There's discussions going on for 10 years. Not a single thing has come out of it. And at least the beef plan got things started, and they were had legal action taken against them. I see the role of the independent farmers basically as to keep the pressure on, keep the factories closed, keep the pressure on, and then let the representatives that were at the last talks back around the table. There's no point in going back to our farms. I have cattle ready to go at the moment, but there's no point in bringing them in here at 350, 355 for heifers and 355, 45 for bullocks. There's nothing out of it. Chagas has produced the figures. We're consistently, since 2011, I think, we're losing money. No other business would carry on like that.
We produce the best beef in the world and we're getting a paltry amount for what we get. We're on the lowest step of the ladder. Then the 30 months rule. If an animal goes a day over 30 months, the factories are entitled to reduce that animal's cost by 12 cents per kilo. If it has more than four movements...
If it's changed hands more than four times.
The producer is the first movement, then the second movement if it goes to the mart to be sold. And then if you have a farm up the road or down the road and you have to move it from one farm to the other because you're out of grass or you need housing or whatever, that's another movement.
You want that abolished. The 70 days rule then.
The 70 days rule then is, if I buy an animal from a quality assured farm, before the 70 days are up, if I sell that animal, then another 12 cents is reduced on the price. So you're back to next to nothing for your product.
Bring the stakeholders back in again and finish out the talks. They know what we want.
What about the court orders?
Well, sure, look, they did the same with the bogs. I mean, and they failed. And they're going to fail with this. How can they put everybody to jail? They put a court injunction on people in factories. Next day, there was a bigger crowd and it was quadrupled here.
People before this died for this country. Like, farmers don't care anymore. You have nothing to lose, and you have nothing to lose. You'll come back and you'll fight to the bitter end, and everybody wants to farm. I think everybody's just sick of them at this stage. They're the only one that's making any money out of beef farming in the country. And like, there's people on the picket lines and they tell you the story. They've kids to put back to school, houses to run, mortgages to pay, and there's just no money out of it anymore.
We saw people hurt up in Cavan at a protest. That's not in our interest. And the only way it can be resolved is that all the groups are invited in, sit round on the table.
Would you lift your protest to allow those talks to take place?
After what happened the last time, I would be not in favour of lifting the protest. I think that the protest must continue until the talks are actually well in progress.
Protesting farmers speaking to me there at factories in counties Roscommon, Tipperary and Laois. Well, to look ahead to talks resuming on Monday, I'm joined by Dr. Kevin Hanrahan, Head of Rural Economy and Development with Chagask, and Adam Woods, the Beef Editor with the Farmers Journal. You're both welcome to the programme. First to you, Adam. Meat Industry Ireland said last night they have respected the Minister's wishes, deferring legal proceedings. They expect protesters to suspend their plant blockades and allow talks proceed. But they say there are more plants being blocked now. Any sign of that changing before Monday?
That's right, John. They released a statement last night saying that they're going to review participation in Monday's talks if protests don't continue. I know on the ground there's a real reluctance there in some locations with farmers to stand down. That I suppose farmers feel that that's the only leverage that they have left. Farmers feel that the last time they stood down for the first round of talks, that there was no real progress made at the talks, and they feel that if they do stand down, that's their leverage gone. So it's a really, really difficult situation there, and it's uncertain as to how Monday's talks will go ahead. With protests continuing at the gates.
So you're saying Meat Industry Ireland might even reconsider showing up for talks on Monday if the protests are still going?
That's what the statement said last night in terms of their participation, that they were understanding that the protests would stand down and would not continue in the lead of the talks happening on Monday. But given that there's been new protests has happened at new factories over the last 2 days, and they said they will review participation in those talks if those protests continue.
There were agreements reached at some other factories, though, for normal processing to resume by Monday.
There were, yeah. It was a big part over the last 7 days was the Chinese inspections, and there was individual talks at individual factories with farmers. I suppose it's a really complex situation because we have such diverse groups, individuals, personalities, and it's all different, I suppose, in different factories. And there were individual talks at individual factories to allow the Chinese inspections continue. And as late as last night in Nina, there was an incident where there was beef to go out to it for a contract in Italy, and I think there was 2 load let out. But in some factories, there's peaceful protests. Some factories are blocking farmers coming in. Some farmers are blocking, we'll say, offal going out and beef going out. So every factory is different and every protest is different around the country.
Stay with me, Adam, please. Dr. Kevin Hanrahan, good morning to you as well in Chagas.
Morning.
Many farmers I've met in recent weeks quote Chagas figures about fair or appropriate prices for beef. Are they getting a raw deal?
Are they? I mean, the reality is that beef costs money to produce, and the unfortunate reality is that on average, farmers aren't making any money producing beef. There are some farmers who have got lower cost production who will be. But, I mean, Chagas has produced figures from the e-profit monitor, but we need to remember that the e-profit monitor figures don't necessarily represent all farmers. They're not designed to be nationally representative. But it's, the key problem here is that prices have gone back by 10% compared to last year, and that most farmers feel that their cost of production are such that they're not going to make any money this year. And we have, as has been stated, been in this situation for at least the last decade of farmers not making any money from beef farming.
And yet, Kevin, Meat Industry Ireland said that price pressure in the market is reflective of the downturn in demand evident across the European market, and Irish cattle prices are the average at the EU averages as well. Is that a fair statement?
They are a little tiny bit below the EU average, and they've, generally speaking, for most of the last number of years been above the EU average. They're right. The downturn in Ireland is also reflective of the downturn in our export markets. British prices are back, EU average prices are back, and of course we've seen a weakening in the sterling exchange rate, which also doesn't help. So yeah, prices are down across Europe.
It's all about prices, and they weren't even discussed at the previous talks in Kildare. The IFA warning that going back into discussions without price would be a waste of time, but we've heard about competition rules. What do you anticipate, Kevin? Will we be talking about price on Monday?
I'm not a journalist, so I mean, I think there is the competition law that means that you're not supposed to do that. It's not allowed, and I think it would be highly unusual if the government, the Department of Agriculture, and the minister were facilitating something that was illegal. And I'm not sure they're not going to do that.
Adam, will the talks be on the table?
I don't think price can be on the table, but I think really farmers would want meaningful change in Monday's talks. I don't think another round of reviews, analysis or reports, that won't wash with farmers this time. I think we have to get some meaningful change, or a real industry review, or a different way of we'll say, a method of pricing our cattle or contracts in our cattle. We know that factories sign contracts with supermarkets for 6 months and 12 months ahead. And I think we have to look at something similar to farmers supplying cattle to those factories.
And Adam, briefly, I see the beef planner saying retailers will not be attending Monday's talks. Not a great start, perhaps, because they've said they wonder if the talks will achieve anything for farmers if you're not talking about price or you don't have the retailers in the room. Is that the case?
Yeah, that's a real negative in terms of, I suppose, retailers are being blamed for some of this in terms of factory specs. And there's real confusion there, and there's some maybe mistrust around who is saying what as regards specs. And I suppose retailers are at the end point as to what they need for beef. So it would be good to have them around the table and be able to talk about what they really need or what different retailers need for beef specifications.
We need to remember that the Irish retail market, the Irish consumer, accounts for 10% of the demand for Irish beef. So Irish retailers can get around the table, or could, if they were allowed around the table, it wouldn't really change the lie of the land fundamentally. I mean, we're talking about retailers and consumers in our export markets, which are the key driver of Irish prices.
Okay.
We need to remember that.
Okay, it's a good point, Kevin. And for many, these protests haven't been just about farming, Kevin. More about the rural economy, the country way of life, protesters predicting the demise of rural communities if beef prices don't rise. Is it that bad? Or some communities might say that's already happening because lots of farm families will be supplementing their incomes elsewhere anyway.
The Chagas farm income numbers for beef farming, and that's the business of the vast majority of Irish farmers, are very, very low. And those incomes aren't incomes really that will sustain a family in 2019 Ireland. And the reality is that most of those families are also engaged in other work. because they have to, because there's no way you can basically live in Ireland on the average beef farm income. So, you know,
so why stay in the business? Because a listener is saying to me, Kevin, and they text us on 51551, why stay in the business if this does not make economic sense? But because things go a bit deeper on the farm, don't they?
Because there's other reasons why people farm. There has to be, because if it was only for the economics of it, they wouldn't be doing it. That's clear. I live in rural County Galway, and it's a lovely place to live, and that's one of the attractions of continuing to farm when you've also got an off-farm job, which many of these people have. So there are many reasons why people choose to farm. It can't only be about economics, because if it was about economics, a lot of these businesses would no longer be doing what they're doing.
Kevin, have you any optimism about these latest round of talks, if the protests are ongoing, or what way do you see things going next week?
I think the protests and the ill feeling and the feeling of being left behind on the income side is very real. It's visceral, but I think everybody, both the on the factory side and on the farming organisation and the beef plan movement and the independent beef farmers side, have to basically all simultaneously take a step back. It's sort of like a peace process is required here. We need to basically realise that there is, for a lot of people, there is still a way of life and a business that they want to continue with. But that's not continuing for either side of the argument, while factories are blockaded and people aren't able to bring their cattle to be slaughtered.
Okay.
Standing down on all sides.
It's still very much up in the air before Monday's talks, and you'll hear more on RTE Radio 1, so do stay tuned. Dr. Kevin Hanrahan of Chagas and Adam Woods of the Farmers Journal, thank you. It's the first countrywide of September, and the first month with a burr means one thing for the farmer. Well, ploughing. September 17th, 18th and 19th of this month are the key dates, and it's all happening in Ballantrain in County Carlow. Now, countrywide will be there on the Wednesday, but as the ploughing championships were launched earlier this week, Brian Lally met some of those who make it tick, starting with Anna Marie McHugh of the National Ploughing Association.
I am excited. When you see the place today, I haven't seen the venue now for 3 weeks because I was at the World Contest. A new site draw was apprehensive. Can we actually create the same again? And in fairness, I think it's beautiful. It's about involving the locals. If you're involving the local people, you're never really going to be in conflict with them, because you're on the ground with them and they're the people that knows what's happening locally. And you know, you take a little girl that plays a guitar or plays a harp or something, and she's never been on a big stage. And to get to be playing in front of the president or something, like, that's what it's all about too.
James Sutton, President of the National Ploughing Association. There's a spend of about 45 million in and around the ploughing for all the local businesses in the area, for the hotels, the B&Bs, employment during the setup of the site here. Remember, it's an 8 or 9 week build here on site. It's the launch of the event. It's a wonderful opportunity to meet the landowners and car park owners and everyone that's involved that has given of their land to put this event together. People will really enjoy the occasion.
I'm Margaret Connaughton, and I'm entertainment coordinator here at the ploughing. There's a lot of people that would like to get here to the ploughing, but I can't get them on because obviously we've only so many hours in every day and we want to keep it as local as possible. There's a huge amount of people that just come to the ploughing to dance, and my dancing stage is full all the time, and I'm constantly asking Anna May to give me a bigger stage front.
And when you say dancing now, what are you talking about? Are you talking about old time? Are you talking about country? Are you talking about salsa?
Every sort of dancing. It has kind of gone to mainly country, but we'll have a little bit of Irish dance, we'll have hip hop, salsa, jive, old style, we'll have the whole lot. I mean, we have loads and loads of entertainment planned, and it's exciting.
Bishop Dennis Nulty, Bishop of Kildare and Loughton. I'll be here Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday. I've invited people to submit their favourite prayer, so there's a competition going all over the country. People will be submitting prayers at prayer@theploughing.ie, also composing a new prayer for the environment. Aware that the environment issue is a huge issue with agriculture, with horticulture, with gardening today, and we're trying to encourage people to bring God into that. We're having a prayer composed specially, so there's lovely entries in that, so we'll be announcing the winners during the ploughing. Farming and farming households are the backbone of parish life, and we will be there to offer people a moment of space, a moment for God, but also a cup of tea and refreshments. People like that, and a bit of music as well. We all love music. It shows God is in the bits and pieces of everyday life, as Kavanagh reminds us.
Inspector Audrey Dormer, member of An Garda Síochána, attached to Carlow Garda Station, and I have responsibility, I suppose, for the site and the management of it, etc., from a perspective of An Garda Síochána. All the different routes, I'm sure you've seen and have heard, the different coloured routes, they've followed the same kind of principles as previous years, developed to suit our site here in County Carlow. And so what we're doing is we're asking people, the routes have been developed, a lot of painstaking work has gone into it, and we're all this very simple message, we're just asking people, please, from whatever area in the country you're travelling to the ploughing, follow the route that's been assigned to your area, and we're hoping that you'll get in and out as quickly and efficiently as possible. We've had a fantastic team. I have to mention Sergeant Michelle Byrne, Traffic Sergeant. The site here is actually bigger than previous years. The availability of parking is far in excess of what they've had for previous years. So we have the different routes. None of the routes are crossing over. They're all coming in from different sides. We'll be dealing with it all with a smile on our face.
Seamus Quirk, I'm one of the landowners here with the ploughing. Well, it's always a big decision, I suppose, when you choose to take on something so big onto your land. But it wasn't that hard a decision, because the ploughing is a thing that I've always went to myself, and there's massive work going on, and it's great to see so many people getting work out of it and so much hustle and bustle in the area. It's not just about the farming anymore. Like, if anyone came down to the ploughing now, they'd find something to interest them, and there's always something to see and do.
Well, ploughing tells me tillage, so how is the tillage man doing this year? We hear a lot about the beef man in the last while.
Well, the tillage man is similar to the beef man. He's not getting the money for his produce, so maybe we should be joining the beef men and all standing together and giving out. But it's not a great year for grain prices at the minute, so hopefully they'll start taking an upward swing soon, because it's not going well at the minute.
Breda Colgan, I'm based at Tullamore or Dromalta, but I've been involved with providing the medical cover to the ploughing now for about 19, 20 years. I would have grown up being involved with the ploughing. My family would always been involved in the ploughing, so it's a kind of a natural link for me. So even on a fine day, you're going to treat, with a crowd of this size, you're going to treat anything from 100 to 150 people a day.
Yeah.
A small number, though, a very, very small number, like in single figures, over the course of the 3 days, will be transferred to hospital for further assistance. But we set up a full medical facility and hospital on site. So we have 80 to 100 personnel here every day, and we're on site from early next week. We have units come from Belmullet, Carrigaline, Dublin, Wexford, Portlaoise, Tullamore, Athy, Mullingar. So right throughout the country, they all come. Merview and Galway's coming, Limerick, Shannon, all over the country. Killarney unit does come up to it. There's certain units we know as within the organisation as ploughing units, where they would be here every year, year in, year out. But yeah, we have great camaraderie, great crack, and the units really enjoy it.
Brian Lally reporting there from Carlow. And remember, the ploughing is coming on the 17th, 18th and 19th of September. You're listening to Countrywide here with John Cook. PJ English says, John, the Independent Farmers Group must be represented at Monday's talks. The protests won't stop otherwise. A listener asked, John, will the farming community stop eating meat in protest? I don't think that'll do us. Well, I won't get into that argument, but it's not going to help the prices, is it? Tesco, Aldi and Lidl are international companies that supply across Europe. It's BS that they're not at the discussion, says a listener. Another caller fears farming is dying in Ireland and dairying will be next to get hit. Why do farmers stay in beef, says a listener? Why not turn to vegetables? We could do with more Irish produce in our shops. 51551 for your texts, or at RTE Countrywide on Twitter. Now, today is National Services Day, and as we salute the men and women of our frontline and voluntary services with a parade in Dublin later, I wonder, who are Ireland's fittest firefighters? Well, fresh from their Hurlers All-Ireland success, the retained fire crews in County Tipperary think it may just be them, and that competitive edge is spreading across 12 stations in the Premier County as they prepare to battle it out in a test of physical fitness and endurance, the inaugural Setanta Fire Service Games next week. It's all part of an 18-month wellness programme they've pioneered, as I found out when I joined them in training for the games, including timed runs, hang tough exercises and a fire engine pull.
Okay, lads, you ready? One, two, three, pull!
I'd offer to lend a hand, but these lads are making it look awful easy. Pulling a fire truck here. How does it feel? He's got his foot in the brake.
That is good, actually. He's going well.
Tough chief fire officer, is he?
He's a very tough chief fire officer, yeah. Normally it's a bit easier than this, but I think he's trying to knock out the competition.
Dave, how heavy is a fire truck?
About 11 tonne.
Says about right.
Did it feel like that?
It did, yeah, yeah.
My name's Lee Rivett. I'm a coach down the local boxing club. I says I joined the fire brigade about a year and a half ago. Because I'm getting old now, I'm 41. I've actually started to to hurt my back and my shoulders. So they do a lot of corrective exercises through the programme, which helps us to stretch out our muscles, I suppose.
That sounds young to me still. Will you be doing this for a while longer?
I'd say I have another 20 years left.
Maybe not pulling 11-ton no. fire trucks.
No. Here in Tipperary, we have 55 fire engines, trucks, jeeps, and we have two full-time mechanics, and they're doing preventative maintenance on what we might have considered our most valuable asset, our fire trucks. But when we stood back and looked at our most valuable asset of those 130 firefighters and what preventative maintenance were we doing with them, very little was the answer. Dave Carroll, Chief Fire Officer, Tipperary Fire and Rescue Service. That's where this whole wellness programme came about, to try and look at injury reduction and a more positive approach to health and nutrition that would be organic and live within the stations.
You mentioned looking after your trucks or cars better than you were looking after people's own health. You learned a lesson from that yourself.
I didn't need, John. Just as this programme kicked off in early 2017, I suffered my own health scare. I had a stroke as a result of an undiagnosed hole in my heart from birth. And I suppose that certainly galvanised my approach on this. And
you're
refocused.
A young man, a fairly fit firefighter or a chief fire officer now. Is that an awful shock?
Yes, young man with a young family at the time. Thankfully, I've recovered pretty much back to full health. And then I think it has probably sent a message to all our firefighters, look after themselves, heart health in particular. It's physically tough, but it's also mentally very tough. They're working in their communities. The people they're meeting at road traffic collisions, fires, their neighbours, friends, relatives, and that plays on them mentally. While we have
very tragic situations, I'm sure.
We have counselling services in place, but I think we all understand the benefit of exercise, even just to clear the head, go for a little run, spend half an hour in the pool or the gym. It does help. It helps enormously. And
well, look, if you have lads that are super fit and you have lads that need to work on their fitness a bit, which is in general that's what we see in everyday life.
I'm Luke Jordan. I work for Satanta College, so we're an online sports college based in Turles. We found lads that were super fit lads, and we even had a funny thing where when we had that done, we compared them to your professional athletes, and we had lads that were, I suppose, quicker than Cristiano Ronaldo, if you like. Lads that had an exceptional level of fitness.
Here in the Tipperary Fire Service?
Here in the Tipperary Fire Service, yeah. We have a couple of...
Have they been signed
guys
up since?
I don't know. I actually haven't seen them around now, so maybe they're playing in the Premiership at the minute. I don't know. These guys, they're retained firefighters, so they could get a call at 3 o'clock in the morning where they're up and gone. So we need to prepare the body as much as we can to reduce injury risk, giving them tailored, bespoke programs to work on any tightnesses or weaknesses or strength issues that they might have. So when they're out there working and when they get the call, they're more prepared for it.
And putting you through your paces ahead of the inaugural Satanta Games today. Tell me about this event. We're looking at a big tower here.
It is. This event now was basically it's a weighted pull of 20 kilograms. It's actually timed. So what we have to do is basically go up the tower right to the very top, and we basically pull the weight, a 20k bag, up the top of the tower, and it's once we get it over the last balcony, that's when the timing stops. So it's all power in the arms and the shoulders on this one.
On your marks.
Yep, get said, go up.
Darren, describe to me what just happened there, what that exercise is about.
If we were doing training nights where there's a bit of fitness involved, a tower pull up the tower would be one of the main ones. It's also a job where we go from, we might get a call at 3 o'clock in the morning, and you're going from being in a relaxed state to lifting a heavy pump in space of 15 minutes, and we need to prepare our bodies for that, you know. So that's why this program is rolled to prevent injury and to gain a bit of strength for us. There's 12 fire stations in Tipperary, so there's a wellness officer in each station. I'm the wellness officer, Nina. All the stations in Tipperary now have been fitted with gyms, so we have gyms there, so each firefighter has their own individual training programme with corrective exercises, and it's up to them then to go in and use the gym and recover from any imbalances that they have, you know.
Hi, my name is Theresia Foot, and I come from Crosshaven, County Cork, and I'm Hungarian originally.
You're one of the new recruits training here.
Yes, I'm still training, and I hope I finish and qualify. Well, I'm originally a fitness instructor and personal trainer, and actually another firefighter woman recommended me.
I'm sure there are many reasons why traditionally this has been a male-dominated sector, but do you think the greater emphasis perhaps on fitness and mental and physical health and well-being, like they're doing here in Tipperary, might help to get more women and men involved?
I think so, but generally I think everything is changing for women. As you look around, a lot of women are weight training, they're lifting. If you look at the lots of different sports, as women we are becoming more aware of our strength and what we are capable of.
How do you feel about fighting fires? Have you got to do that yet, or will
no.
that work?
for you?
No, we haven't. We only had a little barrel to put out. But yes, that's down the line. And I no doubt it's going to put the fear in me. Already have. Well, we are trained. There's no doubt. And we will be more trained. So I should be able to, stand up and fight.
Luke, is this something that might go beyond Tipperary?
Well, I do see it catching on. We're actually talking to a couple of other counties at the minute. One of them has actually started the whole wellness programme. So I see it being big in the future.
These Setanta Fire Services fitness games, well, this could become an All-Ireland competition yet.
I think so, and I suppose they're feeding off the great wins that Tipperary had recently in the hurling.
You look forward to the day perhaps when you'll take on Kilkenny or other counties, so are there fire teams?
Absolutely, although if it gets to Cork I might have a challenge, as I'm a Corkman by birth, so we'll wait and see.
Good luck with that. And may the best fire crew win. The inaugural Setanta Fire Service Games take place in Thurles next weekend. Well, Game of Thrones may be over, but winter is coming. So we asked Mary MacDonald to go to the medieval town of Loughrea in County Galway to join members of Medieval Armoured Combat Ireland. Let the battle begin.
Fair Green, Loughrea, County Galway.
We're out there, we're brutalising each other, we're shield punching, we're hacking at each other with big falchions, axes, and afterwards we all shake hands and go for a meal, and the camaraderie is second to none. It's fantastic.
Men, women and children wander past me in long, flowing medieval gowns. We could almost be back in the 15th century if it wasn't for the children who are running off to play on the swings and slides in full costume. But in this corner of the field, it's not a reenactment. It's very real. Medieval armoured combat.
So you're getting ready to gear up.
I'm fifth of the way through.
This small white tent here is not for decoration. It's the armour room. Barry Flannery and Brian Quinn are seated on little medieval-style wooden stools, coating themselves in plated steel.
I have my greaves on already, putting on the top part of my legs. Because that's my knees. So hold on. Barry's getting a sword.
Barry is just kind of smacking now your armour with his sword. And you can actually see on it the little indentations now.
They're big indentations.
Big indentations that the sword has made.
Yes. And then it's heavy, right? So you can see, probably with all my gear here, it's probably close to 30 kgs.
All around us, other members of the small troop are helping each other into armour.
You get my left arm there. Pull it up over the shoulders.
Oh, yeah?
It's a big job attaching 20 or 30 kilograms of metal to your body. But I can't deny the results are impressive.
It looks really cool. Is there some element of that?
Yeah, the lads there are going to their head all right. They'll be getting a swell head all right. That Brian fella there.
So you can see already the competitive banter is beginning to emerge.
My name is Anthony Power. I'm from County Waterford there, above in the Cumber Mountains.
Okay, ready, round one.
Get to bash people. You get to bash them fairly good.
Fighters ready. You ladies and gentlemen, please to take a good step back from the rope there. And
there's a huge crowd of people lining the roped-off area beside us.
The ring itself, or the arena, we call it a list. That's where we fight.
Brian and Barry stride off into the list. I can't see which is Barry and which is Brian now that they've pulled on their heavy dome-shaped helmets.
Kicks are permitted, hand strikes are permitted, but they do not score.
They're belting each other with heavy, blunt-edged metal swords, and there's no mercy. Next fight, Peter and Lara.
In the black armour is Lara Sparky with the long sword.
Lara is one of the few women in this sport in Ireland, and Barry tells me she's one of the best.
We actually placed third in the world for the amount of medals won at the World Championships, and that was all down to Lara.
As soon as the fight begins, I can see why. She's fierce, clashing her sword against Peter's. The two of them are remarkably agile, but it's Lara who strikes the winning blow.
Lara Sparky!
The minute the fight is over, all the intensity and violence of the battlefield, it seems to be forgotten. It's all hugs and cheers of well done.
Well done, well done.
Over by the tent, Brian is leaning up against a pole, trying to get his breath back.
Sweat. I've got tears. No blood. But it's time for you to share. In the sweat, if nothing else.
I'm whisked off into the medieval tent.
Now we turn this around so the tie is not even.
After seeing her on the battlefield, I'm half afraid to meet Lara.
So my name is Lara Serviol.
Turns out my fears are unfounded. She reserves her mean streak strictly for battles.
It took me, I think, a good 3 years to really enjoy the fighting. I would used to enjoy the end of it, thinking, yes, I did it. Now I enjoy through it because I'm comfortable. I'm not panting and over ventilating and everything. I'm actually fit enough and starting to be skilled enough to enjoy every minute and play around rather than sort of survive.
So you're getting rightly strapped in now.
There's steel armour on my arms, legs, hands.
How does it feel? Can you lift your legs up?
Yeah, I can move. I feel like the Tin Man or something. So, Lara, my headpiece is going on my helmet. Gosh, it's a tight squeeze. I can just see you there through the visor now.
I'm squinting out through a few small holes in the metal.
And even the view from here, I'd imagine that's something you have to kind of get used to a bit.
Some people would wear it at home even and get used to just seeing it through tiny holes like that.
So at home doing the wash up or something just to get used to it.
Exactly.
But David is beckoning me here to get a lesson.
To show you how bad this is the worst it's going to be, okay?
Okay, so...
David is wielding a heavy sword above my head.
So I'll just deliver a few light taps to the head. Here we go.
Sword in your hand, you're going to hit me. Oh, my goodness, ow.
Ow.
Ew, it's just really weird. Yeah, it's like you think your head is going to get chopped off, but then it doesn't.
It's going to be me and
so I'm about to get into the ring.
We're getting ready.
The team are all gathered around me, tightening straps, fixing my hair.
Get your hair out of the face, it's going to be really annoying.
And of course, there's a pep talk. Brian pulls me aside.
So your goal with Caroline is to hit her on the legs, on the arms, and on the head. Caroline is similar to yourself. I think it's her first time in armour, as far as I remember, anyway.
Well, it's definitely my first time in armour. The last time I remember having a fight, I was about 5 years old and having a wrestling match with my brother.
Yep, so there's the final tightening of the shield.
Big, heavy wooden shield.
Oh, 30 seconds.
Here's my sword.
There you go.
Oh, stand up straight.
Yes.
Shoulders out.
Your opponent's waiting for you now. You've got to go.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our second set of fights of the afternoon.
They think they're coming to watch a fight, but all I have in my head is keeping as far away from Caroline's sword as possible.
In the black armour is Mary, and in the red, from this very town, Caroline Walsh.
Ah, a local lady, of course. They're going to cheer for the lady from Loughrea.
Okay, ready, round one. 1 minute ready on the clock. Fight! Fight!
My shield is up, my head is down.
Come on, hit her. Push her, Mary.
But no.
Push her.
There's no getting away from it. Lara wants me to put up a fight.
Don't let her push. Look at her.
I'm exhausted.
Keep fighting.
I throw a few hits, but Caroline is well able for me.
Keep breathing.
But then Lara shouts, go for her head. And I do. One clear shot, and it's over. And I am the unlikely winner.
And breathe a bit, yeah. Well
thank
done.
You.
Well done, Mary. And well done, Caroline.
Well done, woman. Yay. Yeah, it's good afterwards, more so than during, I'd say, when you start.
Oh, absolutely. The first round there, you'd be just winded, like. But then you kind of got into it then, because I kind of saw that I wasn't being really hurt. So it was good fun, actually.
So you were not really overwhelmed. It was just hard to breathe, wasn't it?
It was. I don't think I could have gone now for the fourth round or anything like that.
No, that showed a really lovely last round you did there. Well done.
I think I'm going to need a little bit more practice before the next fight.
Time!
Stop!
Now, well done to Mary MacDonald of Grey Heron Media in Loughrea there with the fierce but friendly members of Medieval Armoured Combat Ireland in a piece funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee. Well, whatever about winter, autumn is coming, and when it comes to the season of beer celebrations, well, it's Oktoberfest. You'll know it takes place both in Ireland and internationally. With craft beer more popular than ever, Suzanne Campbell has been learning about one of its key ingredients, hops, and she joins me now just back from a visit to a farm run by the Wicklow Wolf Brewery close to Roundwood. You get all the good gigs, Suzanne, don't you?
I do get all the good gigs, though we were not drinking, I have to say.
Okay.
We were doing full-time horticulture. Wicklow Wolf, it's a very well-known brand. They've been around since 2014. Started by two guys who lived in California who really got into craft beer in the west coast of America, which is where almost the trend started. Quincy Fenley is one of them. and Simon Lynch, who's a horticulturalist. And they're actually extending their business. They're increasing their size. They're building a new brewery in Newtown Mount Kennedy at the moment. They have 20 employees. They're exporting to France and Italy and the UK. And then up west of Newtown Mount Kennedy into the Wicklow Mountains, near Roundwood, they have a farm. They have a farm about 10 acres. And on 2.5 acres of that, they're growing hops. And hops are a really, really unusual plant. I don't know if you've ever seen them, but they really were a surprise to me. They're like,
if I'm honest, I hadn't until you brought these into me here, but we'll come to that in a minute. Yeah.
They're like the plant itself. They grow in rows and they're supported by these massive stakes, as in like a telegraph pole, kind of 20 odd foot high with wire along from pole to pole. And the plant is a perennial, so it's cut down each year, comes back, grows up the wire up to the very top level of the poles, and then you lower that wire to harvest the hops. So it's
a bit like how a grape is grown or vines.
Very similar. It's called a vine instead of a vine.
Okay.
But they kind of have this beautiful kind of effect. When I was up there, it was breezy and they were sort of blowing and flowing in the wind, like this sort of moving forest in really, really beautiful size. And Simon Lynch, who's in charge of them from the brewery, took me over to one variety which has already fruited its hops, and they're called hop cones, and we had a closer look at them.
If I take one off here and break it down along the centre spine.
So it's quite soft.
It's very soft. What you see there is that yellow powdery residue. That is actually the lubulin, and that is sticky. And when that is pale yellow at the moment. When that turns orange or a darker shade of yellow, it's ripe. It's very, very pungent, and even now you'll probably get a smell of it.
Wow. Yeah. Smells great, though.
Make you want a beer.
Yeah, I know, it does.
Exactly.
And how bigger will they get then?
They'll probably increase to about twice the size of that. That particular variety is quite a large coned variety, so Fogel's gets quite big, probably to about an inch and a half.
You've obviously tried a lot of different varieties over the years. Have you settled on one or two that really suit you, or are you still trying out different options?
We've tried out American varieties to start with, and they cone very heavily, but the cone doesn't increase to the size we'd like, but the flavour is still very, very good from them. The English varieties obviously seem to be the ones that do that little bit better. Now, there's some of the American varieties. The Cascade is an American variety. The cones remain quite small, but it's very, very prolific. But by and large, the English ones, like the Fogels or Challenger, seem to do a little bit better.
Are you seeing many people growing these who make their own beer in that sense, in a very small scale, a couple of plants?
Yeah, home brewers will grow them themselves in their own backyard and grow them quite successfully. When you're tending to one or two plants, it's a lot easier than tending to a whole hop field. And one plant will supply a brewer, or maybe a couple of plants, with a lot of the brews that they need to do for the year.
It's an interesting plant, isn't it?
It's very interesting. It's quite architectural. It's actually a beautiful plant.
It's very like a vine.
Absolutely, yeah. No, it's beautiful. And I think the cones are just, the structure of them is just amazing. Mm. They're really, really lovely plant. I get very excited when I start to see the cones develop. This variety will be ready to harvest before the other ones, but the looks of things this year.
Now, you brought me some hops, Suzanne.
I did.
Now, I had never seen them before, but this is a piece from this is the fruit of the hop.
This
plant.
Is the fruit. So what you're holding in your hand there, and I have one. They're like a cone. They're kind of like a pine cone, but they're green, and they're soft
like
and
a
papery.
Green bud.
It's about
plant.
Kind of an inch long. And if you split it there along the middle, if you go right into the center, that's where the resin is, and that's what goes into the beer.
You didn't bring
and
me any beer, did you?
It has that kind of hoppy smell. No, it didn't bring any beer. Isn't it good, though?
It's too early. And drink responsibly, by the way.
You can kind of see that's the key ingredient in those fresh beers. And I mean, this fruit now, this is immature. So it really, this needs about 3 or 4, maybe 5 or 6 more weeks. And that's why Oktoberfest in Munich and the Oktoberfest in Dublin, it's to celebrate actually the hop harvest. Now, sadly, in Ireland, there's very few hops grown at the moment. We had a group of hop growers down centred around the Moss family in Bennett's Bridge who supplied to Guinness up until the 1980s. And I think then Guinness figured, well, they could import them for cheaper. There's also a scheme in Dublin now called Social Hops, with individuals just growing a plant here and there for microbreweries in Dublin. But at the same time, it's kind of ironic, as our hop growing has stopped, craft breweries are on the increase. We have 125 of them trading at the moment. A few of them closed last year. Growth is slowing down in the sector. It's a difficult sector, but at the same time, we have demand. So sadly, the hops used by both craft breweries and the big breweries in Ireland are all imported, and these are either dried or they're in pellets. So Wicklow Wolf, this company, are using these hops that we have here fresh, which give this kind of citrusy and pine sort of flavours. into a beer called their Locavore beer, which is a freshly hopped beer. And I asked Simon more about that and just why we aren't growing hops more here.
We would like to get to a stage where we're actually producing more speciality beers from it. The limiting factor for us at the moment is that what we produce in Wicklow Wolf is what's called a wet or a fresh hop ale. And it means that we pick, a bit like that bird's eye pea ad, we pick the cones and they're within the kettle within 10, 12 hours. And so they're fresh and they're wet. We don't dry them. Commercially, what they do is they harvest them, they run through a harvester. Our harvesting is done by hand. And then after the harvesting process, they're kiln dried. We haven't got that ability at the moment. So until we have the finance to be able to invest in, first of all, harvest equipment and then drying equipment, we will just continue to do the Locavore with our hops.
And in terms of the variety and volume of new craft breweries in Ireland and the older established breweries, are they all importing hops then at present?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we're the only commercial hop farm in Ireland.
So I suppose the obvious question is, when does the critical point establish itself that we could grow those hops here in a way to supply our own market?
Okay, it's probably a little bit easier for Wicklow Wolf to grow their own hops because we use it in the end product. To do it on a commercial scale, I think it would have to be on a large scale. You know, the limiting factors is the cost of the trellis work. It costs about 15 grand to set up per acre. Well, that's what it cost us. Now, obviously on an existing farm with machinery, you know, that cost might not be quite so high, but for the wire and the poles, the irrigation, that's really what it cost us at the end of the day.
Okay, so it's high investment per acre. It's probably more expensive than importing it?
Oh, absolutely. This would be a far greater cost for us. But because we're trying to produce beer sustainably, we wanted to make sure that we were controlling as much of the process as possible. We have the hop farm up here not only just to grow, but to offset our carbon. We plant trees up here to help us to produce beers as sustainably as possible. Hops grow successfully up to about 55 degrees north. We're at 53 degrees. Ideally, the further south you go, the better you'll have. Commercially, I think it'll be a difficult one, to be honest with you. The price of hops went through the roof a few years back, but it's moderated now and it's come back down. It is a very difficult crop in the sense that it requires a lot of physical labour. Depending on the summer we have in Ireland, you may get a bumper crop, or the following year you may not get three quarters of that crop.
Suzanne Campbell speaking to Simon Lynch there of the Wicklow Wolf Brewery. And thanks very much, Suzanne, for that.